Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zach in Massapequa, what's going on, Zach?
Hey, love the show, guys. Boomer, you should walk into the Evan and Tiki studio and grab an L. I mean, needle movers don't bat 205 in the postseason.
Are you talking about Aaron Judge?
Yeah, or Casper the Ghost, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, you can call him whatever you want. Yeah, it's fine with me, but I'll tell you right now, people love Aaron Judge. They want to see Aaron Judge play,
yeah,
and they want to see him hit, and they flock to see the Yankees because of him.
If your argument about Soto being a needle mover involves Judge not being a needle mover, then you don't have a good needle mover argument.
You know, I think, and I know that, Juan Soto, to me, is a great hitter. He's got a great eye. That's why he was on base three times yesterday. Unfortunately, that eye didn't work in the last at bat of the game. I understand all that. He is a tremendous hitter. He's not like, to me, like Ricky Henderson was like an exciting baseball player. Shohei Ohtani is an exciting baseball. Like, they steal bases. They make people nervous when they're on the base pass.
Juan Soto last year at the Yankees?
I, again, a great hitter. I'm not saying he's not.
No, but he's exciting. When every time he comes to the plate, he's really exciting. He is.
Listen, I know people
are going to take... Is Aaron Judge stealing bases?
People are going to take what I am saying and turn it into something that I'm not saying. I'm just saying to you that there are certain players that when you see them, like, they're completely different than everybody else that's on the baseball field. Now, when it comes to hitting, I will give you that Juan Soto is that. And I'm glad he's on my team. I told you that a million times. I don't think of any baseball player, maybe other than Shohei Ohtani, is worth $700 million. I'm sorry.
Buddy Chris and Hal joins us. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, Boomer, I got a question. Out of all the on-air personalities at WFAN, who would be the needle movers?
Wow,
that's a good question.
Chris always loves taking the topics out from the sports world and putting them here in WFAN, and I really appreciate
him. Who's a needle mover here?
For that, needle movers.
Well, the needle's been stuck on number one here for a long time, so I don't know what to tell you. We don't have to move the needle.
Needle here has been moved and has stayed
for 18 years,
which is a harder thing to do to keep it there. So, other than that, needle movers, got a needle mover?
No,
really, no needle mover.
Do you?
I could say Sal could move a needle.
Marash
is a needle. He's a you know, he gets people annoyed.
That's,
you know,
a needle mover. The needle moves. Like, he can get people hot.
Yeah, I could say,
That needle moves to, like, scalding.
True. Yeah, you can get those guys. How about this? You know, they're on their way to being needle movers.
On the way.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm putting words in your mouth. I have a different needle mover definition you do, apparently. So, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I've given you my idea of needle movers. Tiger Woods, needle mover.
God.
Right? I mean, I will tell you. Michael Jordan, needle mover. Kobe Bryant, needle mover.
Okay.
I do. Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds, they were needle movers.
They were definitely needles. That's right. Those guys.
And they were needle movers and users.
Let's go to Joey in Westchester. What's going on, Joey?
Hey, guys. Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Boomer, I got to say, man, you look up Google and type in who hit the fourth most home runs last year in Major League Baseball.
Juan Soto did. Yeah. I know.
You said
Juan
Soto's not a home run hitter, man.
I know, but I think he's more of like a contact, high average hitter. That's how I look at him. I know he's a, when it comes to hitting, he's as good as there is in baseball. There's no question about that. But do you think he is, by definition, a five-tool player?
No, and I don't think a five-tool player is a major deal when your one tool of the hit tool is that valuable. So like Gio was saying, like, have you watched Juan Soto? Like, watch his at bats, man. Like,
I know he's competitive. He's competitive as hell in the batter's box. 100%.
It's one of the most exciting things to watch in baseball, in my opinion. Just the way he spits on pitches, and and just the way he approaches the game at the plate. I'm a Yankees fan, I hope you enjoy him, man.
I'm a Yankees fan.
I understand. I will enjoy him, but I'm glad he's on our team. And quite frankly, I wanted him like 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, so what is your point?
I don't know. Katie in Staten Island. Katie, what's happening?
Hi, Boomer. Good morning. Hi, Gio. Love you guys.
Hi.
How are you? Huge Yankee fan, okay? But I know what happened to Boomer with the needle mover and Juan Soto because it happened to me. So Juan Soto is like the guy or girl that you see from afar for a while and you're like, oh, my God, this person's gorgeous. I wish I could meet them, blah, blah, blah. Then they come. You meet them. You start talking to them and you're like, whoa. No thanks. I'll take a pass.
Katie.
Wow.
Katie, hold on a second. This guy had his best offensive year on his way to a Hall of Fame career last year with the Yankees. He hit a humongous home run in the ALCS. It was the first time you guys had been to the World Series since 2009 when he got there. And you're telling me you don't want him?
No, I don't want him at all. Nope.
So you didn't want him to re-sign back? You're not just doing this?
No, I did not. No, I wanted him before he came. And then as soon as he came, maybe like halfway through the season, but definitely in the playoffs, I was like, nope, I want to pass. My brothers and father are all Mets fans. I'm like, please, dear God, let him go to the Mets.
But why, though?
Because he's that person. He's just that person. It's like all coding and, you know, beauty and shiny on the outside. But then you get him and you just know he's draining the team. I'm more of a team person. I take a pass. I'm dead serious.
Listen, Katie, he drained that team all the way to a World Series appearance that they hadn't seen in a long time.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I kind of understand where Katie's coming from. She probably also has a little bit of, anger that, you know, he didn't want to stay with the Yankees.
This is getting ridiculous. You want to tell me, like, a needle mover discussion? Fine. But you're going to tell me that you don't want the guy and he's draining the team? Like, what?
There was something that went on there.
What do you mean there was something that went on there?
Like, if he really wanted to stay with the Yankees, he would have stayed with the Yankees.
Yeah, no.
I mean, $700 million, but that much does nothing. That doesn't have.
But that's a different discussion. Where he ended up is a totally different topic.
One more year is another year. He's already got Hall of Fame numbers. He's already going to be a Hall of Famer. We all know that.
No, but what I'm saying is, though, that him staying with the Yankees is not the same discussion of how good of a player he is. That's more of a discussion about the Yankees organization than it is how great of a player Juan Soto is.
Right, but you got to admit, needle mover, Ohtani, Judge, and Skeens.
Yeah, I put Soto in the needle mover conversation. He's a needle mover.
Well, you put him in the conversation, he's in the conversation, so.
Needle mover. Let's go to Larry in Medford. What's going on, Larry?
Not much. What's going on, guys?
Hey, man.
So, Bobby Witt Jr.
Yep. Needle mover.
His numbers were better than Soto's last year.
Yeah, but it's not. But that's not a needle mover.
I don't feel like there's juice around him unless you're a Kansas City Royal fan, you know? I mean, like, there's no... Yeah. I understand, as a baseball fan, I have nothing but mad respect for him.
Wow.
You know?
He's a five-tool player, though.
He is a five-tool player. But listen, he also signed... But you got to remember, Larry, here's one big part of it, too. The Royals came to him with a contract to keep him around. It was worth a lot of money, which is fine. And he took it because he doesn't know where his career is going to go. He's early on in the contract, bought out his arbitration years. If he had waited till free agency like Juan Soto did,
yes,
and all the years of who he's going to sign with and teams trying to sign him and trading for him and all this stuff, and then got to free agency, he would have been a needle mover. But now he's in one of the smaller market places, and he's already under contract there. He's not going anywhere. It's tough to be a needle mover there.
All right. But he's a better player than Soto. Soto doesn't even hit 300. And you're acting like he's the greatest hitter in the world.
Nobody's sitting here saying he's the greatest hitter in the world. He's one of the best hitters in baseball.
Well, you're telling me every at bat is so exciting.
It is. No, it is exciting. It doesn't mean...
You could be exciting at the plate and also suck. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he's both. He's exciting at the plate and really good. You know, I mean, there's guys who swing all over the place and sometimes connect, sometimes strike out. And you're like, oh, my. It's like Jameis Winston. He's exciting, but he stinks.
When he was a player, A-Rod was a needle mover.
Yeah, and
I'm going to say something here that people aren't going to like.
Yeah?
Derek Jeter was not a needle mover. He was a clutch player.
I understand what you're saying.
You see what I'm trying to get to?
Yes, but I am. Here's the thing. I agree with your whole needle mover premise.
Okay.
I'm in on it. I just think that I can't. What I'm confused about is how you don't see the same things in Soto that I'm seeing to put him in the needle mover conversation. Like, I just totally understand your Jeter, A-Rod, needle mover thing. I get it. I don't think that's all that controversial because I know what you mean.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But
if you want to say that Juan Soto is the fourth needle mover in baseball, I'll give you that. That there are three other guys that move the needle more than he does initially.
James in Jersey City. What's going on, James?
Hey, I'm a big fan of you, but you're totally wrong on this needle mover thing. First off, you're saying he's not a home run hitter. That doesn't make him a needle mover. You got guys like Ichiro. You got guys like Ted Williams. Not home run hitters. Massive needle movers. Then you got the 5-tool player thing. What about a guy like Manny Ramirez? Can't even play in the field. Massive needle mover. So what are we really talking about?
Needle movers.
Talking about guys who change a franchise. They put butts in the seats. They sell jerseys. When they're at bat, it's must-see TV. He's must-see TV. He's a needle mover.
You know what?
Also, go ahead,
James.
How is Derek Jeter not a needle mover? I'm a Mets fan, but you serious? Derek Jeter?
He's clutch. He's clutch. Different. Derek was a steady, consistent, clutch baseball player.
Yeah, and also, I mean, not everybody has the qualities that Derek Jeter had. You know, the captain, the leadership, the calmness under pressure, and all those things that he had. I mean, to be the captain of the Yankees, those are a lot of qualities.
And to deal with everything that comes along with that and the expectations, the stress, the tension, all of that. I mean, you know. He's probably one of the great captains in New York sports history.
Yeah, and the other thing that he brought up, I should have brought up, that really cements the point of Juan Soto being a needle mover. Call up the Mets ticket office and ask them if Juan Soto's a needle mover. They didn't sell out their season ticket plans because Griffin Canning is here.
No, that's true, but that's one baseball team and one baseball player. People want to see Aaron Judge. People are going to want to see Paul Skenes when he's pitching. You know, they're going to want to buy tickets to see that particular player, I believe.
Okay, and the same with Juan Soto.
The Mets, yes, but I'm talking about, you know, when they go on the road. Like, when they go on the road, Aaron Judge is, like, the man.
But they're also the Yankees.
But he's the man.
But the Yankees have always been a draw on the road.
He hits bombs for home runs.
I know he does.
His launch angle...
is just, you know what, you can go screw yourself now. Now you're taking it too far. You've been taking it too far now.
This is going to be a whole discussion.
Oh, my God. No, yeah, Rami out there is walking around with half a chub with this going on.
His head is spinning.
You love something like this.
Oh, yes.
Not normally do I take an overnight caller's opinion when I'm driving in and think maybe they had a point. But this one was interesting to me, and this is one of those many times where I have to defer to the man in the arena and the guy who is standing out there and might have been the best guy on the team and had to deal with guys that he didn't think were as good as him. So this is an interesting one. Last year, Juan Soto had who next to him in the lineup?
Aaron Judge.
Okay.
Yes.
Last year, Pete Alonso had a down year. Yes? Down
year. Yeah.
All right. The year prior to Juan Soto playing with Aaron Judge, he had Manny Machado behind him in the lineup. So this old school baseball guy calls up. Now, I'm not saying I totally agree with him or not. I just wanted to present this to you. He called up and said, I think Juan Soto didn't want to walk and put the game in the hands of Pete Alonso in that situation for two reasons. One, he's got the pressure on him to be the man. And two, he doesn't believe in him in the way that he believed in Manny Machado and Aaron Judge. And he ended up swinging at pitches he doesn't normally swing at because he thought he needed to. So it's interesting. And after the game, by the way, this is a part of the story too. After the game, Juan Soto came out straight ahead and said he was totally fine taking a walk in that situation because Pete Alonso is behind him and he's a home run hitter. But that doesn't necessarily mean what he's saying after the game is what he's thinking in the box.
Oh man, we are going deep into this one. I mean,
it's interesting to me from the standpoint of, is that even a possibility? Because you had been on teams like the New York Jets where you came here and you might have tried to do more than you needed to because you didn't trust your teammates all along. I'm just wondering, is that even a thing that athletes think about when they're one of the best player on a team?
If for some reason Pete Alonso wasn't behind him, and maybe it was Senger, right, the catcher,
yeah, right,
I could see that. I could understand that. I think it's the former as opposed to the latter. The former meaning that he wanted to be the hero, that he wanted to come through in a big spot. And I think that clouded his judgment. I could see that part of it.
Okay.
I don't see Juan Soto thinking that Pete Alonso is not going to come through. I do not see that part of it. As a matter of fact, a lot of times we talk about athletes who take the last shot, want to take the last shot, and we always talk about Michael Jordan wanting the last shot or Larry Bird wanting the last shot, but then again, LeBron James passing it off to a teammate because maybe he doesn't want the last shot, or maybe just LeBron's a good teammate and he wants to throw it to the open guy and let the guy make the last shot like he should because he gets paid to do that.
Yeah.
So I look at this and I say Juan Soto got off to a good start. He got off to a really good start, but in this big spot in the ninth inning, he wanted to be the man. I could totally get on board with that, but not because Pete Alonso was behind him, but because he signed a $750 million contract and he wanted to go up there and he wanted to have the hit of the year to start the year.
Right. You know, I do think, though, that if you know that you're going to hit, then swing at the ball that's right over the plate that's hanging there. That's just the one thing.
Well,
that
also tells me by not swinging at that pitch that he's thinking, you know, I'm going to do what normal baseball people do in this situation. The guy's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give him a break, and I'm going to take a pitch at 3-0, and I may work out a walk. So that tells me again that he's thinking like this is what I should be doing in this particular situation. I'm going to take the pitch, and if I walk, I walk. But now, once that strike is thrown, things have changed.
Sure, yeah.
And even Keith and Ronnie were talking about it, and he wants to be the hero, and he unfortunately got fooled by a slider in the dirt that was a ball 50 or 20 feet or 10 feet prior to even arriving at home plate. I think we all saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But it was fun to see him out there. It's fun to see the Soto shuffle in a Mets uniform. It's fun to see him get on base, even though I didn't see because of MLB streaming him get that single. You just know he's going to be on base all the time, and it's going to be rare.
He was on base three times yesterday.
Yeah, it's going to be rare to see him flailing at pitches like that. Well, didn't really flail because it was a check swing, but pitches like that, 3-2 in situations like that. So, but yeah, it was annoying the first week.
I would say this: if you are playing with a player that you want to help, like a young player, like say an Acuna Jr., I think that Juan Soto can have a great impact on that kid. And just talking to him every day, just keeping him focused, keeping him, involved. It was nice to see Brett Beatty rooting for Acuna Jr. there in the ninth inning. That was great to see. So the team is together, it looks like. It doesn't look like there's any frayed edges. So it's one game, it's one situation, and I wouldn't make too big of a deal of it.
Yeah, I mean, and no, but this is what we've got from yesterday. After an entire offseason, you get to see the guys in a game that matters. So you want to talk about it. But, Acuna is an interesting player to me because the stuff that, and I don't know if it was the day, it was Monday that this was, or a day that you were here with Francisco Lindor's comments on Acuna about how he's not focused in games that he doesn't believe matters. And that's something that he's got to work on. Came flat out. Francisco Lindor is like,
yeah,
listen.
Yeah, no, I saw that.
Yeah, so like, and that, I mean, that was interesting. And then just to kind of see him, and then once that throwing error happened, I've got such high expectations from him. So I was a little bit disappointed. And then he goes down 0-2 to Hader, in the ninth, and I'm like, oh man, this guy's going to strike out on three pitches after this, and then he has that at bat. I'm like, okay, he's back. He's good.
Yeah, I mean, that was good. I mean, that was a great at bat, but then again, Francisco Lindor is one of those players that he is the leader. He can say those things, albeit he has to say it, you know, I think a little bit better than that, but it probably had an impact on Luis, and hopefully that's going to be the case. You know, so the Mets are going to have this situation at second base, and they're also going to have the situation in center field. It's either going to be Taylor or Siri, Taylor or Siri, Taylor or Siri, and they're going to go be back and forth. So those two positions are going to be, I don't want to say unsettled, but they will be shared until somebody actually steps up and takes the position. If, in fact, that can happen this year.
Yeah, and it's good. And both of them are very, very good defenders, so it's not going to be about that. It's going to be which one of those guys is hitting more. That's what it's going to come down to. And because that they had, the Mets have decided that that position, they're going to take whatever they can offensively from it, and they're going to have a great defensive center fielder.
I was thinking yesterday, I was going to text Ronnie. I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
I said, Ronnie, you said 850 runs and 150 RBIs for Pete Alonso. We're not off to a good start.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that, too. I know. 850 runs. If they got shut out, that was going to be... I was waiting for you to actually put that out on X. And like,
I didn't want to do that. I would never do that. But I mean, like, I would text Ronnie that, though.
Yeah, I know. But
I want to give it 20 games before I get haywire here.
You're a 20-games guy?
I'm not going to go Rico Bronya on you after one game.
No. I don't think that is what... That's what we're doing here. But yeah, I mean, it's when Ronnie comes out and says that, if you're going to get the jab in, you got that type of relationship with Ronnie, that's the time to do it.
Well, I'm going to give it 20 games.
Do you text Keith too?
Yeah.
Who
he doesn't
more?
Get back to me as much. He's a little bit scatterbrained sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the texting back and forth.
So Ronnie gets more texts because he's more receptive to them?
Yeah, 100% receptive, and right in the middle of the inning, I'll get something from him.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah, I bet you Gary doesn't like to hear that.
He knows I'm watching.
I bet you Gary's like, oh, God. I mean, here goes Ronnie again texting during the game. I mean,
well, he knows who he's texting with.
I mean, come on. Do you think Gary Cohen likes you or doesn't like you?
I think he likes me.
When was the last time you had a conversation with Gary Cohen?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever had.
Yeah.
I've had it, you know, through those guys.
Like, tell Gary to...
No, this. I never say that, because Gary's the ultimate professional.
I would agree with that.
That's why, you know, the fact that, you know, he's a serious broadcaster. Mm-hmm. There's no gimmicky crap with him. And he's learned over 20 years to play the game with these two guys.
Yeah, he knows exactly what to do.
And that's why he's as good as he is, and that's why collectively they're as good as they are together.
Who is the most important New York Met? Who is the guy I look at and say, I need a really good year out of him?
Mm.
And I almost don't want to say like a Lindor or Soto because...
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
I know they're going to be good. Like, right, I don't really have questions about them.
Right, so who needs to step up is really more the question.
Yeah, someone who's in the shaky category, up and down, lack of consistent category that I look at and say, boy... I need him to be awesome. I think with Juan Soto and with Francisco Lindor, their track records are clean enough where it's like they're going to be variations of really good.
And they need to be if they're going to be good at all.
Yeah. It's like the Yankees with Aaron Judge. Like, yeah, no kidding. No bleep Sherlock. Of course he needs to be good. So I was giving this a lot of thought last night, and I have an answer. And I'm curious about your guys' answer, but I kind of want to go first just to make sure you don't steal my answer.
Go ahead.
So you want to guess who my guy is? The guy I look at and say... I need a big year out of him. Need a big year out of him. He is the key to team success.
Francisco Alvarez.
You're going Francisco Alvarez. No, he's already out for a few months. Not Alvarez.
Right. He could come back mid-season the acquisition without actually having to acquire him or give up anything.
Spoken like someone who drafted him in fantasy.
Oh, yes. Wait, I did.
Thumb of the Pro Bowler.
That's what we exactly did.
That's what you did. Hi, Tommy. You seem to know me very well.
I'm going to go with Peter King Aloysius McDonald Alonso.
It's not Pete Alonso.
The
key to the Mets' success, and I think after you hear it, you'll say, that's a good point, is this guy. So Edwin Diaz got off to a good start, then he started to struggle, lost his closer's job, got suspended, came back, and then was pretty good in the second half of the season. And ended up having what I would say was an up and down year, but finished strong. Mm-hmm. Like, even our lasting memories of him. And I know it blew a game against the Phillies in game two, but think about the composure he showed in game four. I did not have a lot of faith as I stood next to positive Tommy that night, and he put the first two guys on base. But he got through it. So I think at the end of the day, Edwin Diaz was fine. But in modern baseball, and we talked a lot about this yesterday with the Yankees, I've mentioned this a lot with the Mets during the offseason, the keys to success is you got to score runs. I think the era of relying on starting pitching is pretty much over. I think it's an overrated aspect of baseball now. You got to score runs. But the other aspect that's not underrated but is really important are bullpens. Bullpens matter. The top six ERAs in team bullpen last year all made the playoffs. It's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
Bullpens matter. So
like holding, closing.
Yes. And also you're asking your bullpen to throw more innings than ever before because you're not getting a lot of innings out of your starters. For the Mets bullpen to be, let's say, a top 12 bullpen in baseball, you need the back end to not feature any questions. Because if it features questions, it leaks out. If Edwin Diaz is losing his closer's role in June, and now all of a sudden you're asking A.J. Minter or Ryan Stanek to get big outs, the rest of your bullpen falters. If the Mets get 2022 Edwin Diaz, chef's kiss. What I really need, though, is just a solid version of Edwin Diaz. And if they can get that, one of the top five closers in baseball, I think it makes the rest of the bullpen stronger. And that's why the most important New York Met going into this season is Sugar himself, Edwin Diaz.
You say this as Paul Blackburn is going to start the season on IL. Your bullpen needs
even really?
Oh, we didn't tell Evan that yet.
Oh, my bad.
No, but you didn't want to tell me that?
It just happened.
News is circulating in about, you know, Brett Beatty made the opening day roster. We're still finding out about Acuna. And yes, Paul Blackburn will start the year on the IL.
Well, I think what that means probably is that Max Kranick is going to make the team. And I'm very, very happy for him. And also, Waskar Brazoban will likely make the team because those two guys are competing for one bullpen spot. If Blackburn's going on the IL, he was going to start the year as a long reliever, not in the rotation. I think that's the answer.
You nailed it. Kranick and Brazoban made the team, and Hayden Senger.
Hayden Senger's the backup catcher. And no official word on Acuna. Does that mean they're still looking for a utility player?
All I see is no official word. I haven't seen why there isn't.
What I said the other day about Acuna is that the Mets are looking to add a player to the roster. Doesn't mean they will.
Yeah.
Like, if they don't, Acuna's going to make the team. But I think they are trying to add a utility player to fill out their 26.
Third on my list. For guesses for you, which is probably the one I would gravitate towards, is Brett Beatty. It's been too many years of him not fulfilling it, and if he gets anywhere close to what Mark Fientos did, then what you were talking about offensively really gets boosted.
Yeah,
right. And it makes it less, I don't know, dependent upon a strong and solid bullpen.
Beatty is, to me, it's important for him more so than it's important for team success, because I think there's a lot of ways the Mets can get production. Like, A, Jeff McNeil could come back. B, Luis Angel Acuna can get another opportunity. Ronnie Mauricio tears up the minor league. So I think for Brett, it's about him, and this is his real last chance to prove he's a major leaguer. But to me, Edwin Diaz is number one. Who would be your number one guy based on the criteria I laid out?
The criteria, you're talking pitching?
Well, no, everybody. I mean, if you want to use Brett Beatty, it could be Brett Beatty.
Well, it would be Brady, but I think you're right. It's about him. To me, it's Kodai Senga.
Because
Kodai Senga was supposed to be your ace 2 years ago. This ghost fork and everything else. And he kind of was on his way. And then he gets hurt and barely pitches last season. And like, now you don't know. But you also don't know about Clay Holmes. You obviously don't know about Doug Peterson, Tylor McGill. Like, you have all of these questions that in your starting rotation. You need somebody who is supposed to be your ace to be your ace. Now, it could be Clay Holmes, to be honest with you. But I think if Kodai Senga has a great season, then the Mets put themselves in so much more healthy of a spot throughout and into the postseason.
No, it's a great candidate because he can be an ace. By the way, David Stearns is meeting the media in Houston, and here's what he said about Acuna, because you guys are right. The roster said, except for that part, we know Acuna can help us, and he's going to help us. It may well be tomorrow afternoon. We just have to work through this and make sure that we're exploring all options before we set anything
so
in stone.
Does that mean?
It backs up what I've been saying
for
2 days.
Means they're looking to add somebody?
Yes. Yeah. They're looking
instead of him.
Yeah, sending him to AAA, adding someone that fits the role of not playing every day. Because here's the issue they may run into with Acuna. Beatty's going to play second base every day. They're only facing one lefty, and that's opening day Framber Valdez. The next week and a half, it's nothing but righties, which means Beatty's going to be the second baseman. So Acuna's role on the team for the first week and a half of the year is pinch runner late. Mm-hmm. I guess he could come in late for defense. Clearly can come in late for defense, but he isn't going to get that opportunity to play every day. So I think the Mets probably view it that they would rather have someone who's more tailor-made for that super utility role.
Right.
But if they can't find someone before tomorrow, then Acuna's on the team.
Now, you mentioned Mauricio, Ronnie Mauricio.
Yeah.
We heard, I don't know, a week and a half ago, maybe even longer, that he was not going to play anymore in spring training. He was going to down in the minors. What's his status?
His status is he's starting with extended spring training. Then once they deem him ready, he's going to go to single A. Once he's ready after that, he'll go back up to triple A. And at that point, then if he tears it up, he could be on his way back. So I think with Mauricio, you really can't think of him as a major league option for, I'd say, like a month or two, probably longer. So we'll keep an eye on the final roster construction. But, yeah, Luis Angel Acuna is still not officially a member of the roster. Who's your most important Met going into the year?
For me, it's Mark Vientos. I think if Mark Vientos is the player that he was, you know, whatever you want to say, second half playoffs, and he takes that next step and is this superstar player, it lengthens the lineup. It takes some of the pressure off guys like Lindor and Soto, and you now have a B superstar guy in the middle of that lineup. Mark Vientos, to me, puts the Mets in a different stratosphere if he is the player that we saw specifically in October, where he basically hit a home run like every at bat.
It's funny with him. Like, the Met fan, I see this. The Met fan last year was very negative going into the start of the year. Like, this team sucks. What a terrible offseason. Mark Vientos is a waste of time. Start of the year in AAA. And this year, it's such the complete opposite.
Well, that's because Mark Vientos stepped into a role.
No, no, he played great last year.
And lived up to it.
And he played great, but the bullpen and the rotation features questions, and yet most Met fans are vibing 90-plus wins.
Okay, so blow five games at the beginning of the season again, and guess what? They'll feel the same way all over again.
You think so? It'll be a quick turn? Right. But the positivity coming from Met fans is actually starting to scare me. Because what I liked about last year was that when there were very few of us being positive.
The evaluation year, I kept calling it.
But very few of us were positive. I was positive. Tommy was positive. Even Hoff was positive. I felt like, you know what? These negative Nelly Met fans, they're going to get their comeuppance. But when they get cocky, like all of them, it kind of makes me nervous. Are you not vibing a little bit of that, Tommy? Like, it's starting to make you nervous that
the NL East is over.
Sal thinks they're winning 97 games.
TV Sal has them at 97 wins. I think Radio Sal more like 84. But I understand where you're coming from. Normally, I would have that approach where a fan base is too gassed up. They're usually setting themselves up for disappointment. But I think they have good reason, Ev. We're coming off this great run to the NLCS, and they got better. They added Juan Soto to a team that went to the NLCS. If you can't, and you have Mark Vientos, you brought back Pete. If you can't be giddy and excited for this season, then you literally are just a negative person.
No,
they are great on paper off of last year.
Am I negative to tell you? And I'll just reveal it right now. I'll tell you my Met prediction. I'll tell it to you. My Met prediction is they're going to make the postseason as an 89-win team that gets the third wild card spot. Mm. Yes, that was the result from last year. Now, I think they'll get there very differently. I don't think they're going to start the year 0-5, knock on wood. I don't think we're going to be, you know, having players throw gloves into the stands in late May. So I think it's going to be a much more organized, comfortable 89 wins. Now, I say that because I'm curious. Am I being negative, or is that, it's a good positive opinion? 89 wins, and they're in the postseason. Is that a good year? Forget the playoffs. We'll get there. Is that a good year on the surface?
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. I agree.
Absolutely it is.
Is that a good year?
It's a great year.
Oh,
To get to the postseason, the way baseball is constructed now, get to October and go from there. Winning a division is nice. You want to hang a banner, but get to October and go from there. That's all that matters anymore. Winning a division, winning 100 games is just something you remember. Oh, remember when the Mets won 100 games?
Well, no, it gives you an advantage. It does.
I don't disagree with that.
I don't care what the early returns
I disagree with that. I'd rather play in those first couple of games.
Come on.
You don't think that benefited the Mets to have that win in Milwaukee? Mm. I know you can't always draw it up that way. I thought that gave them the momentum. And when they played Philadelphia, to me, Philly was the team that had no momentum.
Yeah.
Mets had it. Right?
It felt like that.
All right, so then, I'll ask you guys, since you really feel that way, is final weekend of the season.
Okay.
The Mets are tied for the division, balls in their court, win the games, first round bye, win the division. You're saying you'd rather them lose, kind of like the Knicks dropping four.
I think what Tommy's saying is you'd rather have momentum going into the postseason. Think about where the Mets came from a year ago when everybody had given up. the first 2 months of the season, and all of a sudden it just started to like build.
Right.
And it all the way up to 161, right, where we talked about it. We had to live game watch, and you're freaking out. You and Tommy, I think you shared some tongue that day.
What?
Excuse kissing me? Each other, humping each other, whatever the heck you guys were doing.
And you never called me back, Evan.
Exactly.
Let's go, Mets.
Right, but that propelled them to what ultimately became an NLCS run.
Right.
And so, like, it's important to have meaningful games at the end of the season, especially if you started poorly.
Yeah, I just think that this is very simple. It's very simplistic. I'd rather have to win fewer games to get to the World Series than having to win two more games. So I totally get that over the last few years, it seems to have benefited teams having to be in the wild card round. But I can tell you this right now. Like, 80% of what you said and what you said, I agree with. Just make the playoffs. Yeah. That is a success. I'm
it
with
did
you.
Last year, though.
Right. No, I get
last
that.
Year was the two teams that won the leagues.
Right. Think about that. The two teams that got to the World Series won their divisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it didn't impact the Yankees. It didn't impact the Dodgers. I'm telling you, I want to win the division. It's not the end of the world if they don't. But if they're sitting there final weekend of the year in Miami with a chance to win the NL East, I want the NL East.
Yeah.
I want the NL East to be over, as Sal would say. I'm not going to sit there saying, boy, I'd rather play in the wild card round. Are you guys nuts? You'd rather deal with that kind of risk? It's very, very risky. But either way, it's an exciting time. Baseball's about to begin.
We've gotten so high on this Yankee-Met thing that it's got to a level where anytime Juan Soto does anything, if Juan Soto would have got a base hit in that moment, every Met fan would have been all over the Yankees. See what you missed out on? This is why we brought him in here. But he strikes out, so every Yankee fan takes a bow. All right, so I like to be fair, even though Evan would not be fair with me. Okay? Evan would gladly take me out of context and play whatever I said and pound me with it. But I have to admit, listening to that, I don't know if he's being over the top. I don't know if he's being sarcastic. He sounds like he's genuinely annoyed. So I'm told, as we welcome in the great Chris Lopresti, who will be filling in today in the morning show, I'm told you have the answer on the context of Evan Roberts' conversation.
Yes, that 9-second clip that you've been enjoying throughout the course of the morning was the closing thought of what was a 52-minute Rico Bernier podcast.
Okay.
It was not sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek.
No.
Now, I will say he started the podcast with a lot of thoughts on the Juan Soto at-bat.
Okay.
And while he did say, look, I love Juan Soto, and up until that point,
having
it
a
was
good
a
day,
great debut, but he was genuinely bothered and annoyed by the way that at bat and the game ended and the subsequent text message barrage.
Oh, see, I knew it.
He got from Yankee
I knew
fans.
It. I knew that's it. That's the because you know the Yankee fans are going to take. Listen, they've dealt with it all offseason. Yeah. This is, and we've hyped up this Yankee Met thing to its extreme. So anytime Juan Soto does anything and opening day and it's eerily similar to last year's opening day. Like, that's what, like, it's the idea he came through against Hader for the Yankees and he strikes out against them, strikes out against him with the Mets in an at bat that he's 3-0 on.
Yes.
Like, the other thing about it, if he hits a fly ball that's caught right before the wall, okay. Hits a bullet right at someone, okay. But up 3-0 and then expanding and swinging at a bad slider out, you know, far outside the strike zone, that is so anti-Juan Soto that it's almost like it's even worse because that's his biggest strength.
Yeah.
So it really feels like, man, that's a rough at bat for him in that moment. And I'm sure the Yankee fans are having some fun with it. So, I could tell. I didn't think it was sarcastic. I didn't think he was doing the overreaction of the Met fan, and I'm sure they're going to say this. Like, I knew that was real.
He was genuinely bothered.
Yeah.
I think it was the symmetry and maybe the bizarre world Juan Soto compared to last year, like you said. And the phrase that he referenced with all the text messages where Yankee fans looking to spike the football after one game.
Well, that's what we do.
So there you go.
No, of course. But okay, well, thank you. I'm glad I feel like I didn't misrepresent Evan. Not that I gave a damn, to be totally honest with you. But yes, thank you very much. I knew he was annoyed, and I understand, but it's one game. I mean, the guy got on base 3 times. But yeah, in that and that is the thing about it is, one, if you're Evan or you're, you know, you have a bunch of Yankee fan friends and you're a Met fan that you've been, you know, dunking on the Yankees all off season and saying how you're the big brother and taking over the town and the organization is far run better. I mean, that's part of it too. Like, As a Yankee fan, I try not to let this stuff bother me, and for the most part, it doesn't. And I've always said this. And honestly, I wish they would have beaten the Astros. I freaking hate the Astros. I'm competing as a Yankee fan. We're competing with the Astros. I don't want the Astros to win. I want the Astros to lose. Theoretically, they could be. They could decide the Yankee home field advantage in the wild card series. Like anything could happen. I want the Astros and anyone else in the American League that's any good to lose every game when they play the National League teams, including against the Mets. But even I would have to say, like, it's been obnoxious about trying to give all the reasons why Juan Soto signed with the New York Yankees. I think that's a lot of it. Because, you know, for years, the Met fan has been complaining about the ownership and their lack of spending money. And they don't treat this like a major market. It's treated like a small market team. They don't spend money. The Wilpons are cheap. It's a joke. It's of course, there's the Yankees buying championships, blah, blah. Been complaining about the money this team spent forever. When Steve Cohen was announced, when they first found out Steve Cohen, Met fans found out that Steve Cohen bought the team, it wasn't, hey, we got a new smart owner. We got a billionaire. We got a billionaire who's going to throw around money, a billionaire who the rest of Major League Baseball is uncomfortable him joining the ranks of owner inside Major League Baseball. He runs a hedge fund. He's a Met fan. He buys, you know, Jackson Pollocks at garage sales. Like, it doesn't matter. The money doesn't matter to him, and that's all. I can't wait. And he's got the highest payroll, and he's guaranteeing championships, and we love it. And then, like, when he makes the move where he out-monies the Yankees and spends all this money and signs the biggest contract in the history of sports, it's not good enough to just be money. Now we have to find reasons, especially because it's the Yankees. They're desperate to find reasons why it's because the organization is better. It's not just that the owner is richer. It's that the organization is better, and he chose us over you. It can't just be money, even though you've been fighting to be the money. Like, this is glorious that you're the money team now. It's glorious that you have the richer owner. It's what you've been asking for. But when it finally takes place, when he finally throws that wallet on the table, when he finally wins the big game because of the money, that's not good enough. You got to find reasons why they're the organization that he chose. So there's documentaries, and there's Sports Illustrated interviews, and there's Soto talking about family, and we're talking about suites, and we're talking about everything else other than it was the money, right? And I agree that it's not just the money. I think that's fair. But it's been thrown in the Yankee fans' face. The Met fan has been just absolutely relishing the idea that it's not just the money. It's that we're better set up for future success. Our organization is better than yours. We have a better farm system. We have a better owner. We have a better GM. We have a better pitching lab. We are set up, and Juan Soto saw it, and that's why he's a Met. And we've been dealing with that all offseason long. So on opening day, when he does something that he doesn't normally do and expand his zone and strike out to end the game while the Yankees are winning on opening day, the Yankee fan is going to have a little fun for one day. For one day. It's a 162-game season, and the Mets might be back on top and giving it to the Yankee fan for the next 161. But today, the Yankee fan is going to have a little bit of fun. The leadoff hitter that everybody thinks is a joke that the catcher's hitting leadoff hits a home run. Carlos Rodon, how the hell is Carlos Rodon starting on opening day? Oh, you God forbid you switch things around and give the ace on opening day. Carlos Rodon's a bum. Carlos Rodon goes out and out pitches Clay Holmes, who had a .0000081 whip in spring training, and he's going to be the next ace of the staff. And everything came up roses for the New York Yankees and their fans, and particularly the fans who have this dynamic with the Met fan. And that's why Evan's pissed off. He's pissed off he lost the game, but he knows it's one game. He's pissed off Juan Soto chased outside the zone, but that happens, even to Juan Soto. He's pissed off that Juan Soto was up 3-0 and couldn't come through. I mean, he's pissed off, but he's mostly pissed off because he got text message from Yankee fans. He had guys throwing it in his face, and he doesn't like that.
We're taking your calls on both the Yankees and the Mets. Mets, of course, will open up later on today. They will be on the road. Speaking of which, I did get an update. We had Andy Pettit on before. In case you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We had Aaron Boone to start the show, Andy Pettit as well. And remember I was telling Pettit he kind of got lucky in Game 1 of the World Series, which is hard to believe, BT. 25 years.
Are you talking about Tebow?
The 2000 World Series, yeah, with Zeal, who used to wear him out. And then Pettit took a little shot at Zeal, say, hey, tell Todd hit the ball a little further.
Didn't
next
have
time.
The oppo power, he said. Then he said that, too.
He
said hit the ball further. And then he said he should have pitched outside because Todd didn't have oppo power.
He's right about that. I mean, Zeal could hit one in the gap.
Yeah, you know, Zeal was a good player.
Yeah, he wasn't going to hit. Like, Piazza could go opposite field with the power. But anyway, hey, he made a mistake. Zeal wore him out, and I texted Todd that Pettit told him that.
Well, Todd taking bows. What's he got going on with Todd Wright?
He said he's right.
He said he's right.
No, he's wrong, Todd. That damn Timo Perez 25 years ago, I still can't let that go.
He cost you the game. There's no way around it.
And like you said, it could have changed the entire landscape of that series.
Yeah. I mean, that was...
It was only a five-game series, but still it was a hard... Game 5 was close. Even Game 1, the Mets came back in. Game 2, I'm sorry. Game 2, the Mets came back in.
Yep.
It never felt real, but Jay Payton hit that home run off of Rivera down
Jay
the right
Payton
field line.
Georgia Tech, Jay Payton. He played with Nomar and Varitek. That was their college team. Jay Payton, Nomar, and Varitek played college together and hit in like sequential order with a metal bat.
And Payton was one of those guys who was jacked before that became a thing.
Yes, great bat speed, too.
And he can never stay healthy,
though. Never really put it all together. I always thought I remember watching Jay Payton a lot coming up. I remember reading about him in Baseball America, at Georgia Tech. Like, I was always intrigued by him. I thought he was going to be a star. And I watched him a lot with the Mets. And he did some good things, but... You know, he wasn't, you know, baseball's hard.
Piazza hit a two-run homer. If memory serves, I think the Mets were down 6-0, something like that. Piazza hit a two-run homer. This is obviously the Clemens-Piazza game.
Yep.
Piazza hit a two-run homer off of Jeff Nelson late in that game. A moonshot down the left field line here at the old stadium.
A little frisbee and then Payton, that didn't move.
And then Payton in the ninth hit a right field three-run homer off of Mariano.
Off Mo.
And made it like 6-5, and they ended up losing 6-5. But anyway, point is, yes, that game one was intense.
Well, but here's the thing. So even though it was only a five-game series, I got to tell you, listen, we're never going to know what happened. And trust me, as a Yankee fan, I'm thrilled that the Yankees won that because we've still been hearing about this. But if the Mets would have won the first game, and they probably should have, as we said, the pressure that Torrey talked about that was being applied to him by George, who was still very alive and still
fairly...
Think he
could have been fired?
I don't know if he would have been fired, not after 96, 98, 99. I'm not even implying that. I mean that George's presence... George didn't like losing the Mayor's Trophy game,
let alone
spring training games between the Yanks and the Mets, let alone Game 1 or a World Series. So I don't know how it would have manifested itself. Maybe the players would have been immune to that, but I think that it could have made the Yankees tighter. It could have really made them play with less confidence if the Mets would have won the first game.
Yeah, and then remember, too, 2-3-2, Mets would have had three games at Shea after that. They needed to get a split. And then once the Yanks went up 2-0, you never felt like it was going to be a reality that the Mets... I never felt that way. You held out hope. Because think about what would have had to have happened. You would have had to win either all three and beat that Yankee dynasty three games in a row at Shea and then still get one of two, or go 2 out of 3 at Shea, which, okay, could happen, and then win Game 6 and 7 on the road in Yankee Stadium. No way was that happening.
And at that point, Game 7 at Yankee Stadium still off limits until the Red Sox wound up changing that a couple of years after.
Right.
Where you come in here Game 7, you're not going out with a win, or the old stadium, not here. The crazy thing, too, is as we're sitting here on opening day, and the Yanks and the Mets, and both teams have a lot of talent, both teams have some questions as well. You know, and it wasn't an arrogance, and I'm sure it wasn't arrogance for some Yankee fans back then, but, you were so conditioned to win, even though they got tripped up by the Indians in 97 with Alomar taking Mo deep to right field on that Sunday night. You win it in 96, you win it in 98, you win it in 99. Going into that Subway Series with the Mets, and again, it wasn't like, oh, we're the Yankees. I never really operated. I mess around on the radio here, but I never really operated that way, like, oh, we're the Yanks, you're the Mets. That was never really my thing. Some people do it, whatever, have fun. But I'll tell you, if they were to meet in the World Series this year, the level of confidence for the Yankee fan now compared to then would be miles apart.
In a wrong way.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree.
You just assumed you were going to win because they always won.
Right.
And the Mets didn't. You know, and I know the Mets didn't win the World Series last year, but they swept them in a Subway Series. You took Juan Soto, the changing dynamics a little bit. Like, the Yankee fan would be very uncomfortable.
You know what it is?
If there was a Subway Series. I would love it still.
You know what it is? Huh. Little brother's all grown up now.
Well, yeah, he's not all grown up until he pins Big Brother on the grass in the backyard and smacks him around.
Big Brother's been beating him down, beating him down. Yep. All of a sudden, little brother's grown. He's got some muscles.
Yeah.
And now
he's doing a little shaving here and there. He's got a couple of hairs.
He's been hitting the gym. He's eating right.
I know.
It could be a little different story. And, you know, I know we've talked about this as recently as last season, in season, that there was a collision course potentially for a Subway Series. And we got close.
Yankees
got there. Mets got to the NLCS. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's ridiculous to predict those type of things. But I do feel probably the most confident maybe ever. Because in 2000, I don't remember ever saying it's going to be a Subway Series. It was just almost more like, holy cow, the Mets might go to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that was, for me, a younger fan.
Yes.
That didn't happen. I was, you know, 6 or 7 in 86. Jeez. So when they became good again in 99 and 2000, that was always the hope. But it was never, I never thought about the Subway Series until you kind of had to.
Uh-huh.
And then every year since, it's always, oh, that would be great or whatever. But I don't think I've ever felt like 2006, the Mets were very good, should have been to the World Series, should have won it. The Yankees weren't.
Uh-huh.
And then the majority of others, even 2015, all right, the Mets got there kind of out of nowhere. Yankees weren't there.
Yep.
I never. This is the first time, probably, I feel that it is as legit a possibility going into a season, maybe since 2000, that we get a Subway Series.
It's interesting, and I could see that. You know, the way the Mets started a year ago, that obviously, and I don't think you felt, nobody really felt that way going into last
season.
That's
what I'm saying.
Clearly.
Barely,
to your
not
point.
Even a playoff team, really.
Yeah, true. I mean, most of us had the Mets win in high 70s, whatever, 78, 79. You know, again, I'm a couple of years older than Sal, for those who don't know, but I remember in the mid-80s, I'm like, I don't even know if we use the expression Subway Series. Like, it's just been one of these creations,
right.
Even though it used to happen all the time in the 50s and with the Brooklyn Dodgers finally cracking through in 1955 against the vaunted Yankees and my dad finally getting his Dodgers that championship win. I mean, they lost every year. Point is, I remember in the mid-80s, even though the Yankees didn't have the pitching, the Mets were terrific, even in 84, 85, and obviously 86. And the Yankees had Ricky Henderson and Don Mattingly and Dave Winfield anchoring their lineup, not to mention Ron Guidry, Dave Rigetti, and some other, just to keep things moving. I could name the whole lineup, but I won't. It felt like there was a chance then. We just didn't communicate it that much. I feel like now it's
right.
More topical and more target.
Yeah, it could have happened a year ago. And I'm not saying it's going to. Like I said, I think it's tough. You look at the road in the National League, tough for the Mets. But both teams going in are on the same page where the expectation is World Series.
I agree. They got a chance. Nice crisp win by the Yankees.
Yeah.
A lot of things I wanted to see that I did see positively so far.
If that is a harbinger for this Yankees team, that one game, then I think it's going to be a fun season in the Bronx. Because it's all about, we talked about it yesterday. For me, it's about the young guys being the biggest key. And two of them yesterday with Wells and Volpe. I mean, look, it's Yankee Stadium, so you can knock the wall scrapers, if you will. Or certainly Volpe. I felt confident in Wells, and that's why I think he's going to hit a lot of home runs, because the ballpark's a part of it. He hits the ball hard, he pulls the ball, so you're going to get a lot of home runs. Volpe's ball, we were both there in the stadium for that. I think everybody in the ballpark thought it was a pop-up, can of corn, right field. Next thing you know, it goes out.
Yep.
But either way, those two guys with the power. Good starting pitching from Carlos Rodon, who maybe he has turned a corner, BT. We're now not just a year removed. We're now a year plus removed from his awful, you know, time with the Yankees in his first year. He had a solid year last year. He seems to have loosened up a little bit, smiling and laughing after the game yesterday. Devin Williams, even though it was a little shaky, still got the job done. Didn't blow it. Cool, calm demeanor. If that was a harbinger for the Yankees, I think it's going to be a good season for them.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the situation with Wells, to me, is the most encouraging. Yeah, listen, you love Volpe getting some confidence as well, going yard, scraping the seats, the wall doesn't matter, it's a home run. But with Wells, and I remember seeing this last year, and I don't know if I really backed this up with stats, but just watching him every night, I'm like, man, I love this kid's swing, you know that. I love his presence. He's become a real defensive asset, but he seems to miss a lot of high fastballs, right? And what pitch did he hit in the seats? That was a high fastball, letter high. And I was watching the postgame stuff on YES, and Aaron Judge was asked about that because Wells went down to Tampa in January and was working with Wells. And one of the things that Wells really emphasized was getting on top of, because it's hard to do it, getting on top of the high fastball. And again, if yesterday's a harbinger of things to come with him handling that high heat, I think he's going to have a terrific year. I think he's going to be really good. The Volpe stuff is what it is. It's a small sample, but it's a good start. I thought Jazz looked very good at second base. And how about the bullpen? 3 2/3 innings of solid baseball. So all in all, I mean, listen, the Brewers aren't a great team, but it doesn't matter. You get a win, and now you get to see Max Fried after a day off today. And it's always better starting with a win rather than a loss. Pretty crisp win for the Yankees. I liked it.
And it's exactly what the Yankees do. It may not be sexy all the time. These current Yankees, may not be sexy all the time. Maybe shaky at times, but still they find a way to win some games. All right, let's get to some Midday Madness here with you, BT. We'll do it on the phones. BT and Sal, brought to you by Boost Mobile. Lou is calling from Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. Wants to join the Madness and talk about Soto. What's up, Lou?
Hey, guys. Soto, how you doing?
Good.
Soto is undeniably... Hey, how you doing, guys? Soto is undeniably the best hitter in baseball. But I think he's going to find a big difference hitting in front of...
In front of Pete rather than Judge. I mean, listen, yep. He had his best year with Judge behind him. Now, he's had other really good years, and there's a reason why he's thought to be... You know, what he is. I get it. I do think there's going to be a little droppage. I think the park is a little bigger in city. I think he's going to have a really, really, really good year. But we'll see. I mean, it's an early read on the Judge stuff. And I don't know if that's why he expanded his zone. But Alonso is not Judge. And he never had Judge behind him in the past outside of a year ago. And he never put up a season like he did a year ago.
Yeah, I think it's well, he's had monster seasons.
Not
before.
Like last year.
Yeah, he's had monster seasons.
But
before.
Not like last year.
Juan Soto has always been a great player.
Not like last year. I agree. He's always been a really good player. But he's never put up the numbers he put up last year. It's a fact. He's never put him up like that.
I think Juan Soto, well, yeah, I mean, he also played in Yankee Stadium. That's a part of it. So you're talking about the career high home runs.
I hit a lot the other way. Didn't deviate from that.
Did he have career highs in everything last year?
I was close. I know he had the 40 home runs. Well, what? Well, think about this,
Sal. Juan Soto won a World Series. He won a World Series. Was Aaron Judge a part of that? No, he wasn't, because Aaron Judge is ringless.
No, I understand that.
Okay, well,
but the Padres also got better when Soto left.
There is a thought, because there is a thought, I'm not saying you do this, but there is a thought that Aaron Judge makes Juan Soto who he is. And that thought is as idiotic of a thought as anybody could possibly have. Now, you'd also be an idiot to not think that somebody would benefit from hitting in front of
That's
Aaron
the point.
Judge. No, it's not the point.
That's my point.
The point is, well, then it's a foolish point.
When his numbers were better, how is that a wrong statement? Pull the numbers up, Sal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look at what he did with Judge behind him.
Okay.
Cool. And look at what he did without Judge behind him.
Right.
In his career.
Okay, I'm going to bring it up right here. Let's see.
I already know him, so I'm not going to punch it up.
Right. His career best, right, home runs for him was a career best. Outside of that, he has had a season with more RBI. He has had a season with a better average, multiple seasons with a better batting average. Let's see.
Don't count the, I mean, you can if you want, but the 2020, I'm just saying the 2020 season, when he went bonkers, the short season, the COVID year,
He hit, let's see.
What about the year when he hit .246?
He hit
and again, I'm not here to disparage Soto.
Right.
Soto's amazing.
Well,
but the fact that, the thought that he didn't benefit from Judge's presence to me is ludicrous. Now, it's up to him to dispel that this year. And he might.
Dispel what? The year before with the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
The year before with the San Diego Padres. 35-109, 132 walks.
I get it.
He hit .275.
Okay.
His OPS was .930. Last year.
40.
Yeah, 41 homers.
So he had more home runs.
Okay.
Keep going.
He had six more home runs.
But one
holy,
for one.
The fact crap, that, what a difference.
Oh, keep going.
Same amount of RBI.
What's the OPS?
The OPS was .989 compared to .930.
And when did he have the .930?
He walked a fewer times.
Okay.
He hit .275 the year before versus .288 last year.
What was his OPS last year? OPS plus, pardon me.
OPS plus was...
The numbers slightly, as you're looking it up, I don't mean to jump on it, but the numbers...
155 versus 178.
178 when?
155 with the Padres, and 178 with the Yankees last year.
178 as an OPS plus.
Okay, in 2021, he had a 175 OPS
plus. But he didn't have 40 home runs.
Oh, you know, he had 29 that year with 95.
11 fewer than he had with Judge behind him.
In 2019, he had 34 home runs and 110 RBI.
Not 40.
He hit 282.
Sal, he's great.
BT, look, listen.
He was a little better with Judge behind him.
He had a career high in home runs with Aaron Judge hitting behind him. Juan Soto has been the same Juan Soto before Aaron Judge existed. So,
that's slightly debatable because the numbers suggest that he was better last year. Not every number.
I'm confused by the. Are we saying that the home run numbers are better? Because that I agree. Yes, he had a career high in home runs, and that could also be attributed to playing in Yankee Stadium as well.
What did he hit last year? What was his average again?
35 home runs.
No, not the home runs, the batting average.
275.
275.
Yeah. He's a career 285 hitter. He hit 288 last
year. What did he hit the year before that?
He hit 242.
Okay.
Wait, hold on.
That's, by the way, that's not. I'm not even going to use that to jade my argument because that's not Juan Soto.
Can I just come in here? This is what I'm going to tell you. So he had career highs in runs, career highs in hits, and career highs in home runs. Take away 2020 as nothing because that does not count.
Right. Yep.
He had career highs in 2019 and 2021 in batting average, OPS. Those were higher in 2019 and 2021 than they were last year.
Right. But if you were to go through and
RBIs were more in 2019, doubles were more in 2019.
But if you were to go through and come up with almost like a... And you can't really do it. Like an average, I guess you can with OPS plus if you want to.
On base percentage was higher in 2021 at 465. So, yes, he had three stats that were higher last year.
Yeah, but three of the most important stats.
I thought home runs don't mean a lot because Pete Alonso is just a slugger, and that doesn't mean a lot. So if you were comparing just home runs, then it doesn't. Home runs mean a lot, but if you take everything in 2019 and 2021, he was a better player. He was a .313 hitter. He had an OPS of .999. He had 29 home runs, 95 RBIs, walked the most ever in his career at .145. On base percentage of .465. That's better than .419.
Yeah, but I've also heard two of the stats where they were better then. Listen, that's fine.
But they were all better. That's fine.
Yeah, but. It's to me, it's not about the numbers. Like, if you look at what Soto did the year before with the Padres, 35, 109, similar walks, 132 to 129,
yep.
And the batting average is 13 points apart. It's almost identical.
But it's not with the OPS plus, Sal. It's like 15 or 20 points higher here last year with Judge.
Okay, but that's 1 year.
No, I understand
that. He has had higher OPS plus.
I think once he had a higher OPS plus.
Well, that was.
And he's never had more home runs.
Okay. I know, but you're isolating two stats. Are you trying to tell me that Juan Soto was a product of Aaron Judge?
Did you hear me say that once?
I'm asking you.
The answer is no.
That's all that I'm saying.
Well, I agree with that.
So then we agree. Okay, so then what's the point? Juan Soto was not a product of Aaron Judge.
But I don't think that there's anything wrong to say that certain players benefit by playing with other players.
Well,
by the way, Sal, if Soto was behind Judge, I actually don't know how much better Judge could do, but I would think over the course of Judge's career, if he had somebody like Soto behind him, he'd probably be incrementally better. Just like when Jordan found Pippen, and Magic found Kareem, you're going to be better. That's not a knock.
I'm fine with that. Same way that we both want Bellinger in front of Judge because we think it would benefit Bellinger.
Said the same thing.
But I think it's different because Juan Soto is not Bellinger. Juan Soto on his own has proven to be a star offensive player. Would he benefit from Judge behind him? I think Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams, and Willie Mays.
Anybody like Ruth? Yeah, I probably agree with that too.
So that's all my point.
But I got you. And this is not to minimize him.
Right.
I think he's going to be a beast. And if you guys just tuned in, I don't think it's a big deal that he struck out. He's going to be Juan Soto.
You may not be trying to minimize him, but the caller was. The caller called up, and his intention was to say, I think Soto without Judge behind him. And I just want to make it very clear, and I think we are both on the same page with this. You could say some of the numbers were inflated with Judge behind him. We'll see what happens for the next 10 to 15 years with Juan Soto without Aaron Judge behind him. But there is a track record without Aaron Judge behind him.
That's why I got $800 million, by the way. I get it.
That's the point. That's all. BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll come back. We'll continue with the calls, 888-808-1019. Just getting started on this Friday morning on the Fan.
Evan Roberts, Tiki Barber,
It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Hey there, welcome to Friday, and let's just get all this crap out of the way. It's only one game. The Mets aren't going 0-162. The Yankees aren't going 162-0. Don't overreact to opening day. Blah, 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 blah. We all know that. We got it out of the way. But here's what's happened yesterday. And I need Tiki Barber as the most honest, down-to-earth person here at WFAN to just tell us if this is okay. When Juan Soto went after a slider that was 50 feet outside and he struck out to Josh Hader, all over the tri-state area, I wasn't the only one, all over the tri-state area, Yankee fans got their flesh. Yankee fans texted, oh, DeSoto,
that's your $800 million man.
I mean, it was constant, not just for me. I'm just one person. But Tommy faced it. We all faced it. So my question to you, Tiki, is we sit here 19 hours after the Mets lost the game to the Astros and about 20 hours after the New York Yankees defeated the Milwaukee Brewers. Is it really justified for us as Met fans to take verbal beatings from Yankee fans
yes.
off of one at-bat in one game?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Why?
Because this is exactly what everybody warned the Yankees about a year ago. There are going to be moments where you're going to get frustrated because this bat sits on his shoulder waiting for the walk.
Well, I wish it did, by the way.
No, hold on.
I wish it
hold
did.
Hold on. Back up.
Yes.
Back up to his fourth pitch in that at-bat. Which was a slider, and it was the only strike he saw.
Yeah.
And he looked at it. Swinging at 3-0 at that moment would have been aggressive, Juan Soto.
I had no problem with that.
You got looking for a walk, Juan
Soto. No. You know why you're
you
wrong?
Got looking for a walk, Juan Soto.
No, that's not what happened, though, because on 3-1, he elevated and swung at a fastball by his eyes.
I know that, but I'm saying the 3-0 he looked at. If he swings at the only strike he got.
I'm not killing him for that.
I know you're not. Yankee fans are killing him for that.
No. Yankee fans aren't killing him for that. Yankee fans, and I guess this is going to be a thing. Like, I guess this is the reality of 2025 baseball. Yankee fans are just saying nanny, nanny, poo-poo because last year, and I got to admit, okay, it's one game. I'm not worried about Juan Soto. I'm not worried about the Mets.
Be.
Nobody is. But I have to admit, because I always want to be honest, and it didn't really hit me until I was going to sleep last night. Didn't even say this on the Rico. The fact that it was the exact same situation as last year. He had an amazing at-bat against Josh Hader last year.
Yep.
The Yankees as a team had great at-bats against Framber Valdez last year. Juan Soto was the hero last year against the Astros. And then this year, it ends on just this awful, anticlimactic. Yeah. And you guys are enjoying every second of it.
No, I'm not enjoying it.
And it adds to the insult.
As an IBO, again, honestly, my first impression as an IBO was, damn, he should have swung at that first slider.
That's it?
That's what I thought about.
Okay.
And then I said, yeah, it sucks to be a Met fan today.
Look, fine. You want him to be aggressive on 3-0? Okay. He was aggressive on 3-1 on a fastball that was up. The 3-2 pitch was 10 feet outside. He thought he was getting a fastball like he said. He strikes out. And look, strikeouts happen. Baseball's the kind of game where if you fail 60% of the time, you're one of the greatest of all time.
Right.
So
no, if you fail only 60%, you are the greatest of all time.
No, you are the greatest of all time.
You 400 over your career.
I was thinking more of on-base percentages. But
Right.
So I get that failure happens. But what stung for me as a simple Met fan was I should show you what I heard on my phone. Mm. And it was varying degrees of troll. So Met fans, I'm sure you dealt with all kinds of it. Like some were very innocent, like Sean. Sean, I admit, I think the text message you sent in the Evan and Tiki chat was a very, I call it a soft troll. Like I don't think you were vicious, and I don't even know if you knew it at the time, but did you know that you were trolling us when you texted us?
What did I text you?
You don't even know what you texted us.
I texted you a fake spoiler.
Were you hammered or on a gummy or something?
No. What did I text? I texted, Soto homer, wow. I knew I was ahead listening to the radio.
Well, hold on. Tommy, as a diehard Met fan, did you ignore the Evan and Tiki chat or did you see Sean's message and agree with me that you took it as a troll?
Oh, it was 100% a troll. It's actually worse than a troll because it's so subtle. I'd rather Sean go, ha ha, that was embarrassing than... Oh, well.
That was
because it was very, Sean was predicting that Soto would hit a homer.
Right. For those who don't know what we're talking about, Evan writes, wow, incredible at-bat.
For Acuña.
After Luis Angel Acuña's 12-pitch at-bat where he battled and fought off, I don't know how many foul balls. And
legendary.
Then ultimately, legendary. Takes the walk. It was a great at-bat.
Amazing at-bat.
The very next text, which came
3 minutes
later. Juan Soto. Soto homer. Unreal.
He's predicting that Soto would hit a homer.
By the way, this is from Sean.
Thought it was
Soto
happen.
Homer. Unreal. And then very next text. Oh, well.
For me, the Soto home run unreal, that doesn't even bother me. That's like, you want to say it's a troll, fine. It's the oh, well.
I was actually confused for a second.
Am I behind?
I was like, what am I missing?
I forgot I sent oh, well, to
but
be honest.
The oh, well, and that's an example, and I'm sure a lot of Met fans got this yesterday. That's a very, like, basic troll.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. I got another troll from a friend of mine who is like, wow. You know, same situation last year, except he came through. I got another one that literally just said, F1 Soto. So the variety that was flying at me, and again, I'll say this every 3 minutes just in case people have a hard of hearing here. I'm not worried over one game. I'm not freaking out over one game.
You shouldn't be.
But I'm admitting that getting trolled around Juan Soto is clearly going to be a thing all season when he fails. Obviously, there should be a lot of moments in which he comes through. And yesterday was annoying. And yeah. I think everything added up to make it annoying. And I'll tell you another thing that made it annoying. And this is about last year and about this year. And it's a reminder, folks, last year's last year. This year's this year. Mm. It's very different. This game yesterday was a last year game. Everything about it. They're lifeless offensively for the first seven innings. Where have we seen that before?
Right. One hit for first four?
Remember game 161 against the Braves, Spencer Schwellenbacher? It's the same thing, bro. We saw it all year. The game against Toronto, Bowden Francis, they get no hit in the ninth inning. Lindor, it's a home run. Same thing. And then they kind of have the magic, right? The magic turns on. Everything's amazing. Think about game 3 of the wild card series against the Brewers. Same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pete Alonso turns the magic on. This game yesterday was the same thing.
Right, just right? One thing missing.
The one thing missing.
Oh, my God.
Was the OMG base hit, right?
Yes.
You have these incredible at-bats against Hader, back-to-back hits by Tyrone Taylor and Starling Marte, the ridiculous at-bat by Luis Angel Acuña, which I thought saved his day because he was having a very rough day before that, and it's all set up. So I think what added to the frustration is it was 2024 until Juan Soto went after that slider in the dirt.
Yeah.
And so it was a reminder of, not that this year won't be successful, I still think it will be, but it's a reminder, this ain't last year.
Yeah, no, it's not last year. One, because Jose Iglesias is no longer on the squad,
mm-hmm.
So the OMG might not show its head every now and then when it's needed. But it's also, look, the team was flawed. We knew this at some point, right, in this offseason. The starting pitching wasn't ideal because of all the righties that the Astros throw out there. You're not going to get Senga. You're not going to get Peterson. So you go with Clay Holmes, who hadn't started a game in 6 years.
Mm.
And so, yeah, spring training when you're pitching a bunch of minor league bats is phenomenal. And he's not a favorite, but whatever. He's an interesting pick for the Cy Young. But getting to a real game where there's real jitters, he's a little shaky.
Also against a really good lineup. The Astros are a damn good team.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
And so it's not like he was bad.
No.
He just wasn't Cy Young caliber.
Well, that's only you and I because we made that crazy bet. Yeah, it was, to me, it was more about the offense did nothing for essentially 8 innings, and then it started to wake up, and the only thing missing was the big, big hit. But it's not about the loss. It's not even about that. It's about the fact that as this game ended a little after 7 o'clock and baseball's back, and you all know it was happening to you, and some of you are Yankee fans, and you applied it. It was trolling season. And I think what I'm starting to realize is this is our reality.
Oh, man, he better get out of that quick. He better hit a game-winning home run.
Well,
like,
and if that happens, by
tonight,
the way...
By the way, you can't see it on local TV.
It'll be on Apple TV Plus.
Apple TV.
But if that happens tonight, and this is a part of, I think, what I'm learning is now we'll troll back. Like, this is going to be a thing all year. Like, Mets-Yankees has always been a dynamic.
Oh, this is going to set up an awesome
Subway series. Yeah, well, we've got a month and a half before that happens. So we've always had back and forths, but this is on another level. Like, this is going to be an every night thing. Like, if Soto does something big tonight, Sean, I'm just going to give you a spoiler alert. Not from me, but you're going to hear from Tommy. And
great.
If Soto strikes out in a big spot, Tommy, I got a spoiler alert.
You're going to hear from Sean.
No, see, that's where I do disagree with you, Evan.
You texted OL.
But you have to understand something.
What?
Yesterday was opening day.
Yeah.
Yesterday was the, you know, the birthday cake that comes out of the big birthday celebration from signing Juan Soto. The idea that in the big spot, the game coming down to Soto, your first chance to see him in a Met uniform and he does something he didn't do all year at the Yankees, swinging outside the zone to strike out. I don't know that you could. Now, look, Subway Series game a little different. Postseason's a little different. That moment happens versus the Milwaukee Brewers in the middle of June. You're not going to get the text from Yankee
Disagree.
Fans.
I think you're dead
I
wrong.
Really don't. You're not going to get it from me.
Well,
just the idea of like that was. It was great to watch your big moment you looked forward to crash and burn.
I think the dynamics have changed. Yes, it's opening day. Yes, it's a holiday. I am warning my fellow Met fans, get used to what happened last night. Get used to the fact that if bad things happen, you're going to get trolled. And if good things happen, you're going to apply the troll. Right. And I'll tell you something else that bothered me. And I'm not mad at you, Tommy, but I'm kind of mad at you. I had three different people explain to me, because I went back initially after I did the Rico, and I said, I don't understand. What have I done to you? Was I coming on the radio after the Mets signed Juan Soto really prancing? I was excited about acquiring a player, but it wasn't necessarily anti-Yankee. And what I heard from three different people was, oh, no, Evan, it's not you. It's big brother Tommy. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. Why That's do I true. Have to pay for the sins of Tommy?
Because he's your child. He's your on-air child.
These are Met fans that were mad at you or Yankee fans?
No, Yankee fans. They're like, the reason you're going to get crap, even though, you handled yourself with some class during the offseason, not complete class, but some class, is because, well, Tommy is a big baby, and so we're going to take it out on you and every other Met fan. And it's like, why do I have to pay for the sins of him? I'm not screaming for a half hour with Big Brother. That's Tommy.
Yesterday.
But Tommy's not accessible to them like you are.
Well, right.
That's what it is.
Yes. Podcast. Yesterday was one of my favorite days as a Met fan in my entire life.
Really? Why so?
Because he's keeping receipts.
Because, Tiki, it proved what I've been saying for the last 4 months. Yankee fans are now the little brother, because what I saw from Yankee fans yesterday was little brother behavior.
Look,
let me be the
down.
First to
doubling down on it now, Tommy.
Congratulate all the Yankee fans. Let me be the first one to congratulate you on winning the World Series on opening day, because you would have said to us back in the day, my entire life as a Met fan was rooting for the Mets and every team that was playing for the Yankees, where the Yankees and their fans hung out in their ivory tower and said, they don't care about the Mets. We don't care about you, you little brother. You sure as hell cared a lot about it yesterday, little brother.
Well, I don't think the Yankee fan actually cares two iotas about the New York Mets. I think the New York Yankee fan cares a lot about Juan Soto.
I think you're right
on
about
the
that.
New York.
Yeah, Mets. I think Bingo. You're right. I think you're right about that. It's like, it's the person. And I'm going to read this to you. This is from another buddy of
it's
mine.
It's kind of like us in the football season last year. We hate the Eagles. We only cared about Saquon Barkley on the Eagles.
You cared about both, though. I don't know about that one.
It was worse because of Saquon.
Yeah,
definitely.
No, it definitely adds to it. What I got, this is a long message I got from a Yankee fan explaining everything. He said, this is going to be a very long, painful experience for you. Expectations can be a thief of joy if you allow it, which you are. Perspective has already been lost in the moment. Losing hurts, but it hurts more because some Yankee fans got on you. Who cares if Soto has a Yankee in that exact same spot, in that exact same yard, versus that exact same pitcher, got way better results a year ago? Not everyone carries the powers of the pinstripes. He may end up being mortal now. Are you prepared for that? Have you ever seen Superman 2 when he loses his powers and becomes a regular man? And I'm like, what is happening? It's one at-bat against a top-line closer, and this is what we're dealing with after one game. And we're going to find out over the next few days and weeks and months. I don't believe it's a one-time thing. I believe we live in a world, whether it's Tommy's point that they're big brother or not, but we live in a world in which Juan Soto is under a microscope from Yankee fans on a daily basis. And when he fails for our team, we're going to hear about it. So be prepared. And hopefully you'll be able to deal with it better than I did last night when I got pissy.
Just remember this. May not be you personally. you guys threw the first stones, okay? And all Yankee fans are answering because you know, even if it wasn't you, and you definitely know Tommy Lugauer.
What?
If Juan Soto had connected on the big home run there to win the game, would Met fans have not just been the first one in every Yankee fan's text messages and timelines going, big brother, he's ours now, whatever. All we did was throw the salvo back we knew we were getting if Juan Soto connected. And shame on all of us for not imagining, oh my God, there could be a moment with the game on the line with Juan Soto. In one way or another, we're all getting attacked.
It is war, clearly.